Hello and welcome to this episode of Better Off Red. My name's Pip Adam and this is episode 122. This is a short episode because it's nearly New Year's Eve and you'll be wanting to party, I guess. Party. That's what people do on New Year's Eve. Woo! So this is a very short episode. This is a small talk that I gave at a fundraising event at Brooklyn Primary School. It was an event called Appetites and it was a lot of fun. We got to drive there together. I was in a car with Branavan Nangalingam, then we picked up Emily Wrights, then we picked up Joe Randerson. It was a lot of fun. Their talks were amazing too. So yeah, this is just a short talk that I gave there. And yeah, it's about reality TV and how much I love it and how much it confuses me. Well, actually, I think what it's really about is how much reality confuses me and how do I try to make sense of it through watching reality TV. Anyway, I hope you really enjoy it. There'll be one more of these little me-centered episodes. I hope they're okay. I just thought it's nice to give guests a bit of a break over Christmas. And yeah, these are some things that you might have missed because they were in very small venues and stuff. Anyway, la la la, hope you really enjoy the episode. Thanks so much for listening. You can subscribe to my Substack. Whoop. And I hope you have a lot of fun. Gosh, I've done a lot of sound effects in here. I can't do any really, but yeah, I hope you enjoy the episode. Thanks, heaps. I have been given one word as the North Star to write toward, and that word is appetites. So I wanted to talk to you about my insatiable appetite for reality television. Mainly I'm doing this because I only know a handful of people who watch the programs I love. So I thought I'd take advantage of this to speak out loud some of the thoughts I have about the shows I'm so drawn to. My particular crack cocaine in the unscripted ecosystem is a particular brand of competency porn. I love watching people doing their job well. And among my current obsessions are Below Deck Mediterranean, Sailing Ship, Down Under, Adventure, actually all of them. If there's one on, I'm watching it. Below Deck is a stable of shows that take place on luxury charter yachts. We hang out with the crew as they look after the worst people in the world. Not rich enough to own a yacht, but rich enough to charter a yacht. The crew work incredibly hard for low pay with the possibility of big tips completely at the whim of the worst people in the world. I also love the Selling franchise, Selling Sunset, Selling the OC, Selling Tampa. This series orbits around a group of offices of the Oppenheim Group, a real estate agency that sells very expensive properties. Cue more terrible rich people. My mum thinks I watch these for the houses, but if you've watched any of them, you'll know the trademark blinding white filter, which whitewashes every million-dollar house into a void similar to that scene in The Matrix. So I don't watch these programs for the houses. I like watching people work. I've thought long and hard about what it is about these programs I love so much. Let's face it, it's not really anything to be proud of, but I would rather watch them than almost any prestige drama show, and I'd rather watch them than read almost any book. I've also thought a lot about why I love the ones I love. I, for instance, have never gelled with any of the romance reality shows. And I've decided it comes down to a few things. The first is professional development. So, as a freelancer, and now someone who works for a charity, there is not a lot of space for training, especially leadership training. So in a lot of ways, these bosuns and chief stews and captains and real estate agents are my work mentors. Now, I know at first it might look like these programs rely and even produce toward chaos. A lot of them are just as concerned with the resolution of conflict. There's a real sense that the chaos is produced for the participants to find ways to subdue it. Although the catfight is a big part of reality TV, shows like Keeping Up with the Kardashians have an arc of generally solving big problems by the end of the episode. Will Chloe invite Tristan to their daughter's birthday party? Does Kim have lupus? Will Courtney lose all her hair or just that 1 inch square where her weave fell out? These problems are usually solved by one of the Kardashians taking charge and getting things done. The leadership example is nowhere clearer than in Celebrity Treasure Island. Unlike the other shows I've mentioned, this show takes place outside the dominant and preset hierarchies and structures of work or family. At the beginning of each season, I get excited that onto this blank slate some new form of government will appear. I love watching the negotiations for power that take place in the structure of the show. Leadership changes often, and discussions about who is best to lead are out in the open. It's incredible for me to watch decisions about who is the boss that in the real world take place behind closed doors, taking place in front of me. Another interesting part of this leadership game is the way skills that are strengths in the outside world don't immediately lead to power on the island. It's notable perhaps how well actors, dancers, and comedians have done in this show. Often, the job I get to see done well is communication, lateral thinking, and, well, being able to fake or double fake. Although that's not overly fair because I think that sometimes in Celebrity Treasure Island, despite how it's set up, caring becomes a bit of a superpower. The second thing I like about these reality shows is the way they mess with narrative. No matter how scripted or manipulated these shows are, it seems impossible to force them into a traditional narrative or plot form. There is often a glorious overhang in them, a sort of bagginess as neat finishes don't happen, as people don't live happily ever after, and how, recently, the programs leak into real life through social media as the actors in the shows take control of their reputations and personas, explaining their actions, pointing out cruel edits, and often shit-talking other actors in the show. I use the word actors here as in people who take action rather than thespians. Now, the final thing I want to talk about is food. The thing I really love about these shows is the relationship to and representation of eating and food, because these are one of the few places you will see people eating, like properly eating, and the politics around food becomes absolutely crystal clear. In Keeping Up with the Kardashians, the takeaway salads the family eat out of plastic disposable bowls with plastic cutlery feel almost as famous as the bodies eating them. People eat with appetite in these programs. They pull their hair extensions out of the way of their mouths with their long manicured nails while they take large mouthfuls of crisp green salad, often drenched in creamy dressing. In Selling Sunset, much of the drama takes place in restaurants, where women will order French fries and burgers and bread, and again, while they come to the restaurant for the difficult conversations, they often fall speechless because of their enjoyment of the food. This becomes a bonding experience as women in conflict stop to talk about what they're ordering and how good it tastes. As a side note, the other type of work which is really apparent in these shows is service work. It's been quite disconcerting lately to watch as wait staff are still wearing masks while the eaters go unmasked. Also, the food at the Kardashians is often packaged, but you never see the food arriving. A great antidote to these shows is the Below Deck franchise, where you are with the service folk as they hastily wolf down packets of uncooked ramen to rush back to the galley to serve 13-course degustation menus to some drunk, terrible people. Nowhere, I'd argue, is our society's messed up weirdness around food more visible than in Celebrity Treasure Island. One of the centrepieces of this program where celebrities are cast away is the lack of food. Contestants are given small amounts of rice and beans and then compete for other food. Season 2 of Celebrity Treasure Island, which came out over the lockdown in 2021, seemed to create some kind of group hug. There was something wholesome about it, and included a more diverse cast than you would see on many state-funded TV shows, and took real care to acknowledge and include the tangata whenua of the land it was being filmed on. It felt like a real affirmation and community-building tool while we were all living small, isolated lives. Season 3, which finished this year by contrast, was nothing short of a horror show. With each week, it descended further and further into some kind of real-life Squid Game. One day, someone will write a thesis about how this is a reflection of the time, the group psychosis of living with COVID that can no longer be kept at bay. But for now, I just want to talk about the part food played in this car crash of a season. Contestants were hungry. There were several emotional and disturbing departures. Although there are mental health professionals on set, one contestant talked in an interview about asking a counsellor for food and being told no. None of the crew were allowed to take food on set during the season after apparently some of them gave food to contestants in previous seasons. Each week, there was this horrific juxtaposition of the well-fed hosts and the very hungry contestants. One particularly upsetting moment was when the host announced the prize for a challenge was bedding and not food. At least one contestant cried. Unlike many of the reality shows I watch, which filter reality, like you have to treat them as allegory or metaphor for reality, Celebrity Treasure Island Season 3 was a straightforward reflection of the society we have built ourselves. As in life, the teams who won food kept winning challenges and therefore more food. Often, the food won was rich, and as science has been telling us for decades, a body that has been in a state of food denial will overeat. There's a very real moment where Dame Susan Devoy throws up midway through a piece to camera after eating too much lobster. As a person who was put on her first diet at 2 years old, I related extremely. One of the three finalists talked in the final episode about their struggle with disordered eating, and I couldn't imagine how one could eat in any other way in the setup of this show. All this ended, as in life, with one white, cis, able-bodied man who had been given all the advantages of the game, unsurprisingly winning everything. Unlike the season before, no good deed went unpunished. My favourite contestant, Elvis Lopiti, brought me to tears when in the final, they talked with confusion and sadness of a secret Jesse Chook had kept from them, even when they had asked directly. Chook had explained he didn't want to tell Lopiti the truth because he was afraid Lopiti would throw a challenge if they knew, thus hampering Chook's chance of winning. Lopiti says honestly, and with sadness, I would never have done that. And Elvis Lopiti wouldn't have done that. And what made me so sad in that moment, why it brought me to tears, was it just showed how little we know about each other and how so much of how we judge each other is just a projection of our own motivations, our own fears, and our own messed upness. I've never been so grateful for a program to be over, because that's right, I watched the whole thing, every episode, every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday for 10 weeks. I didn't stop watching when Susan Devoy threw up. I didn't stop watching when the contestants started cooking their rice with seawater to try to get some taste into it. I didn't stop. And I'm not sure it made me any better of a person. I don't think I watch these programs for escape either. I'd argue no one does. I watch them to bring reality, real reality, into even sharper focus. I watched Celebrity Treasure Island too, because while in lockdown, I wanted to be reminded of people, of what we are like. I think I watch these shows largely as a study of people, of the many options of how to be in the world. I use them as school, as training, for why people might do the things they do. The amazing artificiality these programs offer to see reflection on action, on the whys that are so often obscured in real life. I watch them to remind myself what it looks like and feels like to be kind, and what it looks like to be unkind, and how similar the motivation for both of these things is, and how similar the feelings are. I think largely I watch these shows to remind myself that Elvis is a possibility, even when you come face to face with a Chook.